Star Wars Action News presents Republic Forces Radio Network, bringing you coverage of Star Wars, The Clone Wars. Our hosts will review the toys, books, comics, games, and all things related to the Clone Wars animated series. And after each new episode airs on Cartoon Network, our hosts will recap and review the show. And we want to hear your thoughts on The Clone Wars. Call us at 415-508-JEDI every Saturday after a new episode, and your call may be played on the air.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Republic Forces Radio Network, discussing all things Star Wars animation and television. And we are here tonight to talk about Episode 18 of Season 4, Crisis on Naboo, this week's most recent Clone Wars episode. And joining me to talk about this week's episode and the finale of the Obi-Wan in Disguise story arc are Jen.
Hey, guys.
Jonathan.
Hey, everyone.
And Barrett.
Hey, all the Swanlings out there, it's Barrett, Master Collect 'em All from the forums, your Swan Holocron Enhancer. And Rockstar, I'll give you a hello when I stick your body full of laser bolts.
Always something with you, man. All right, now we are going to be talking about our finale of this arc, as mentioned, Crisis on Naboo. And as we have, we'll go around and see what everybody's initial thoughts were, and we will start with Jonathan.
Well, last time I said that I didn't have very high hopes for this episode. Well, I guess I'm going to kind of have to eat my words, because for some reason I really enjoyed this episode. The pacing, the misdirects, some of the characterizations that went on. I really enjoyed this episode. Nobody's more surprised than me.
All right, Barrett.
I guess I would have to compare this episode to the dessert of the meal. You know, they wrapped it up real nice. Even the fortune cookie at the beginning kind of made sense to what was going on. I believe it was trust is one of the greatest gifts. And I did trust in Filoni and his crew to bring us the wrap up of this arc satisfactorily to me. And he did. You know, one thing Jonathan said was there's a lot of misdirects. It did not end the way I thought it was going to end. You know, we had some surprises at the very end that I did not see coming at all. And I even watched it again to see if, you know, they gave you any hints of what could happen at the end. And they did really good by hiding the information and keeping it so it was a surprise, you know, even though, you know, we'll get into that. But I have some comments on the Anakin and Dooku fight, which was very entertaining. Mm-hmm. And just a couple little things here and there that I did notice.
All right. And Jen.
Like you guys, I like the episode a lot. This has not been my favorite arc. I've had some problems with it, but for the most part, it was a fun episode. I enjoyed it. I really liked some of the stuff at the very end where Anakin is talking to the Chancellor, and I will get into that, but some of that was really fun. And I enjoyed that they kind of played with us. Like the fact that it ends with Obi-Wan still in his disguise, we don't see him himself, and I was certain he would get outed in some way. And so the fact that they kind of messed with us and changed what we thought was going to be the ending, I like that a lot. I had some problems with that weird hologram disguise thing, but other than that, I had really nothing to complain about in this episode.
All right, and I too really enjoy this. I like Jen. I have some issues with the holographic disguise generators and how they work. And also, like Barrett, I kind of felt this kind of gave the Return of the King multiple endings. That's one of the things people always complain about with that movie is, oh, it was going to end, and then it wasn't going to end. And this kind of felt like it had two or three endings. But all in all, it was a good episode. It wrapped up nicely. And after how horrid I felt the box was, this was a nice way to wrap up this one and get us ready for our finale arc. So let's jump right in. We get to see two different planning sessions. We see the Jedi planning session on Coruscant as they're getting ready to go to Naboo, and they're preparing their defenses, knowing that Count Dooku has this attempt in mind. And then we also see the kind of the flip side. We see Cad Bane and the bounty hunters making their plans. So let's start with the Jedi's side. Theirs is fairly cut and dry, but we see Anakin getting a little lippy. That was kind of fun.
Yeah, Anakin's panties were really in a wad there. You just tell he was just like sick of the whole bunch at that point. And, I guess I understand it, but, you know, he was just almost like looking for an argument at that point. I thought it was interesting because at one point he says, well, everything seems fine. And Yoda kind of chides him a little bit. Well, yes, you know, we've got everything covered, but it's the things that we don't know about that I worry about. And he goes, well, fine, then let's just let everybody do their job. I mean, it was just like he was looking for an argument, had just walked in there with a chip on his shoulder.
You know, this was one of my favorite parts of the episode was the beginning, watching Anakin with his little chip on his shoulder, because normally throughout the series, when Anakin gets a little lippy, it kind of bothers me, you know, because I don't want my future Sith Lord to be kind of a smart aleck kind of brat. But I forgave Anakin this time because he truly got duped. He did not ask to get lied to. They all decided that they were going to lie to him. You know, Obi-Wan, Yoda, and Mace, the Jedi Council, all decided to go against him. They did not trust him. You know, this was one of the times where his fears have really come and bared fruit. And, you know, I wanted Anakin to say more, you know, because I kind of put myself in that situation. If some people that I had given my life to, that I trust beyond, you know, beyond all reason, didn't have that same trust in me, I would be a little upset too. So this was one of the times where I forgave everything Anakin said. And I was just like, yeah, Anakin, yeah, you have the right to be upset. You know, and I really like the looks, you know, that they give to each other. It starts straight from episode one, when Qui-Gon is saying that he's going to train Anakin, how Mace and Yoda give these, you know, they have these silent looks between them. And I really love that, you know. And we saw that in this training stage here that they had.
You know, it's interesting because they really are, you could tell it's toward the end of the Clone Wars because they're really laying the groundwork throughout this episode of the division that's going to come between the Jedi Council and Anakin, and how Anakin doesn't feel included and doesn't feel trusted. And it almost makes the break when he goes against them and sides with Palpatine more believable to see things like this and situations like this.
I actually thought he would be more angry. I was kind of surprised at how controlled he was. And it got me kind of thinking about how he's not just letting this out. He's not just getting angry. He's internalizing all of this and he's brooding over it. And he's thinking now, like, over and over, like, what are they not telling me? What are they not telling me? And I thought it was a really cool character moment. And we keep seeing it, and it kind of culminates at the end with Obi-Wan when he, like, the one person he thought he could trust is completely, like, pulled the rug out from under him. And I really enjoyed this just for this Anakin character building. The bounty hunter stuff was kind of the second to this in my mind, because this was just fascinating watching it. And Palpatine is just feeding into this. It was beautifully done.
Yes, it was really cool to see how this is all really working out to Palpatine's advantage, Palpatine's plan, which makes you wonder if he kind of maybe suggested or has known what's going on all along, because this works out way too well for his overall intents for Anakin, right down to what happens at the very end. And we know, obviously, him and Dooku have been chatting and they know what's going on. But this whole arc, and especially this episode, this leads into the events of episode 3 really, really well.
You know, Rockstar, you mentioned that Dooku knows who Sidious is. You know, he says it to Obi-Wan in episode 2, that the Senate is run by the Sith. So he knows that who Sidious is. He knows he's a Dark Lord. You know, it's his apprentice. What does Dooku have to gain to keep going through with this plan of kidnapping the Chancellor? He knows it's Sidious. He knows that no harm's going to be done to him. All it could do is go against Dooku. It could just make things worse for Dooku. So I kept asking myself, what does Dooku have to gain in this?
Well, it's all part of the bigger game. It's part of the big picture to sort of destabilize the Republic. That's why we never see one side or the other get the upper hand. Significantly, it's always this very careful balancing act between Palpatine and Dooku. And I found myself wondering if this was almost like the trial run, or if this would have been what started, you know, started episode three, if they had captured Palpatine here, would, you know, the events in episode three have just been accelerated that much? Or if they were starting to just sort of lay the groundwork that the Separatists wanted to capture Palpatine?
See, on one hand, I could see that being kind of cool, that this was the groundwork for that plan. But if this means that season five is going to be what way are they going to try to kidnap the Chancellor this week, it's going to turn into 3/4 of the EU books out there and the kidnapping of the Solo twins every week. How are we going to try to get the Chancellor? That's going to get a little bit old.
Unless it's used more as another way for Palpatine to sort of establish that, you know, he needs to have more military under his control. They need more resources because, look, you know, they almost kidnapped me twice. And so we're going to need more of these planets with, you know, Republic forces on them, because you notice that there were no real Republic forces stationed on Naboo. And by the end of the Clone Wars, we know, again, from EU novels, that a lot of the planets have Imperial governors and Imperial garrisons stationed on those worlds. So again, maybe this is just kind of laying that groundwork and providing justification for what Palpatine needs to do to solidify his power when he dissolves the Republic and creates an empire.
Again, for me, that would just go against everything that, you know, that would go against Dooku's favor. And the only thing that I kept telling myself was Dooku wants to destroy Sidious. And that's the reason why he's going along with this, is he wants to kidnap the Chancellor and maybe he'll take him out, you know, because Dooku has stated that he wants to rule. You know, that's no secret. There's one to have the power and one to crave it. And that's how the Sith Lords become the master and the apprentice, is the apprentice has to take him out.
It will be interesting to see if they do use this as an attempt to bulk up reinforcements in various planets or intensify the production of Republic war clones and the like. Baron, to your point, you got to wonder if Dooku knows that Palpatine/Sidious kind of has his eye on Anakin as a replacement. If he is trying to prove, no, I'm the best guy for the job, even though I'm as old, if not older, than you, and so we could both die of old age before this gets pulled off. You just got to wonder what's going through Dooku's mind. But this is all a lot of extra speculation. We've gone a little far afield of our original topic, but we'll bring it on back to the bounty hunters planning session. And in here, I think the biggest point that we all want to get to is the use of this holographic disguise generator and how exactly it works, because I didn't see them all carrying hologram projectors on them. It just kind of projected them and they stuck. And this derailed me. This made it a little bit difficult for me to believe, because it's just odd.
Dan, I'm so there with you. That was sort of like, huh? What? What? How? Because it's like they stepped into the holograms and then the holograms stuck. And every so often they would kind of derez and come back. And again, nobody noticed when this happened. That more than anything else, this episode kind of did pull me out. And I just kind of had to give them their mulligan, I guess, to use a term that we've used prior episodes. This was my mulligan for them, because I just kind of wanted to see where they went with it. But it didn't make a lot of sense, especially considering the hologram technology that is used in Star Wars looks way different than that. Although, again, kind of pulling back to the last episode, I guess we now know why they had to have that one Snivian character there, and I can't remember his name right now, because Dooku states that he was the inventor of this technology.
I think the thing that irritated me most about it is because it didn't follow their shapes. Like, they show Enbo walk into it, and he's got that big, broad hat on, and the hat just kind of disappears. And, like, I feel like if it was an overlay of some sort, it should have kind of been, like, sticking out of the sides or something, like a bad Photoshop job. Like, it just confused me how that was supposed to work. Like, was it, like, a manifest thing that was covering their actual physical frame? Like, it just really confused me and threw me out of the episode. But I think I can see why they did it, because otherwise it would have just been too difficult to have these characters infiltrating, like, especially with that one character, like the little guy with all the tentacle arms. He's not going to fit if they did the traditional, like, Han and Luke in episode 4 in the stormtrooper armor thing. Like, I can see logistically why they did it, but just, I had a really hard time. They called him Shadow Holograms, I think. I don't know if that's something different. I don't know if that's been in the EU anywhere, but that just didn't work for me.
And also these Shadow Holograms, Jen, you're right. That's what they called them. They also apparently allowed the wearer to speak basic, no matter what their native tongue was.
Well, I can see that I'm probably the only one who did my homework this time, because if you go to StarWars.com, it basically says that this is a experimental holo technology, and along with the, well, to your point, Jen, how you said that, you know, Embo has this big hat, and well, it says there is that the technology, basically what it does to compensate for someone's height, so to say, is it quote unquote paints in more area. So if someone's shorter and they're supposed to be taller, it just kind of paints it in there. It just kind of makes it look like they're supposed to be. And it also says that the technology, along with the holographic technology, that it has various sensory technology. So it sounds like it manipulates the senses of the people around the person in order to fulfill the disguise, the deception. And that goes along with the technology. So it's a sounds like it's a combination of holographic technology and sensory deprivation technology in order to get along with the with fooling somebody. But it does say it's experimental, so I guess that's how they get around it. But the thing I didn't like about it was that the technology never worked correctly. I mean, you kept seeing I couldn't really tell if it was for the audience to see, like the kids who are watching it, to see that this is Cad Bane, this is Obi-Wan, or if the people around them could actually, if they were looking at them at the right time, could actually see the disguise kind of tear down for a second.
Oh, they could see the disguise tear down because that's how Obi-Wan ID'd them. He saw it de-res on the tentacle guy. I'm sorry, I'm drawing a blank on his name or species. And that's when he kind of gives Mace and Anakin the warning, because he sees the mask kind of de-res. But to that point, that doesn't make a lot of sense to me, because when Cad Bane is sitting in the crowd with all those other people and nobody around him notices it when it de-reses.
Yeah, that struck me as kind of weird. These things kind of shimmer and show you who's underneath at random. How many people were standing around Cad Bane and at no point said, "Wow, dude, you look just like this bounty hunter that's wanted"?
Yeah, within the force field, too. It's like they're in a very confined space, you know. But I kind of just gave it a mulligan that they kind of had to do it to remind us, because we didn't know that Cad Bane was actually going to be one of the dignitaries in the bubble, because he never really said where he was going to be. So they kind of had to tell us that. But I kind of just gave him a mulligan for that, kind of like, you know, like on Family Guy, does anybody really hear Stewie talking, you know? They kind of use it when they want to, you know, and they cut, you know, but nobody really hears him say, you know, he's going to kill the mother or whatever. So I just kind of gave it to him like that. It's, you know, a mulligan.
Oh, it definitely was a plot device. But one other thing that I kind of thought was funny is that I don't know why Cad Bane chose a Nemoidian to be, because don't you think that the Naboo would be like, you know, no, you Nemoidians from the Trade Federation, I don't think we're going to let you on the planet today. I mean, and maybe I'm being speciesist.
From the Trade Federation. Yeah, you're right. It's surprisingly that you're still having Nemoidians on Naboo at this special occasion. And this is the occasion that is supposed to celebrate Naboo joining the Republic, you know. And it's like the Trade Federation was one of the guys who was kind of like blockading us, you know. And that's the reason the Republic kind of had to step in. But that's funny. And it's like, isn't like a Nemoidian just a blue Cad Bane or a green Cad Bane anyway? It's like, it's not even that different.
Well, it looked to me like the exact character model of the captain from the Nemoidian captain from the blockade episode of the Ryloth trilogy, first season. I think it was first season.
I don't want to say all Nemoidians look alike, cause that's wrong.
No, we know that they don't, but he looked pretty much exactly like the captain that Ahsoka was able to defeat in a space battle.
No, no. They do all look alike, and they don't know how to swim.
Well, all right. We've kind of got a little bit ahead of ourselves. All the bounty hunters are given posts. A couple of them are guards. Rallo Evol is the getaway driver. And you know what? After you guys mentioned it last week, I did notice every time he talked about himself, it was in the third person and he had to use his full name. It was ridiculous.
I was busting up laughing every time he said that too.
So everyone's given their positions and we see that in some cases, yes, the box was actually, it did have tests similar to what they did. And once the plan starts to go down, we actually get to see Daraun use his ability to go through a race shield. And we get to see some of the tasks that they did perform in the box pay off. So, all right, maybe they made that episode a little bit worthwhile. Though you didn't see them fighting all the Jedi Council that was there together. So that test I'm still calling bogus.
You know, Daraun kind of cracked me up this episode because earlier when they were breaking into the Naboo garage and he takes out one guard or one mechanic and the other mechanic looks at him, I swear he just like makes a scary face at him and like sticks his tongue out and the guy runs away and then Bane shoots him. I just couldn't believe – I had to rewind that. I'm like, did he really just make a face, a scary face and a noise at him and to chase him away? Because that seems not so bounty hunter-like, but it certainly made me laugh.
What I liked about that scene is we found another use for Embo's hat. It's kind of like Captain America's shield.
I was thinking the same thing. He just watched the movie.
And where were they breaking into? I couldn't really figure that out. It was obviously a warehouse of some kind. Well, obviously they don't have any abandoned warehouses on Naboo.
Well, they needed some transportation, so they had to break into a speeder garage, obviously. So we see the plans start to kick up and some very intricate details. Interestingly, the Chancellor is knocked unconscious and he actually gets swapped holograms. He becomes an unconscious guard and is drug away by Cad Bane in disguise, while Twazi takes on his identity and is led away by the disguised Embo. This plan actually has a little bit of merit. It did seem to be going pretty well.
I thought that was a really cool use of the, you know, once you gave it to him, the shadow hologram technology to sort of, you know, switch roles with all the confusion. Nobody's going to really notice that. And I thought it was very funny when Anakin thought he was saving the Chancellor. The Chancellor walks off the speeder and just punches him.
Yeah, that was. Though Twazi did get paid back for that and lost an arm.
Yes, that was very cool that Twazi lost an arm. And I like the way that they kind of showed the arm decapitated. Is it still called a decapitation when the arm gets chopped off? When the arm got chopped off, it didn't really show the lightsaber to arm contact, but you could still see the arm kind of went out of frame and the lightsaber go up and then the piece of the arm go behind Twazi. That was really cool. But again, this is another mulligan that you had to give him, you know, and I gave this mulligan to him because Obi-Wan is sitting there at the top of the tower and he can oversee everything. He should have been able to see the bounty hunters switching identities with the Chancellor, and he should have been able to call that a long time before he called it, and as well as Cad Bane dragging off the Chancellor. He should have been able to see all that. And, you know, I was gone with it, so I gave him a mulligan for that. You know, maybe Obi-Wan's eyes are, you know, and his new body aren't working very well. Who knows? Maybe he was reloading his gun because we found out that he can only shoot one load. So I don't know. What do you guys think about that?
I thought that whole him only firing one shot thing was weird to begin with because he can only fire one blast, which he finds out later. But he knows from the get-go that it's only a stun that he can only shoot stun blasts. How do you know what you're shooting, but you don't know what you're shooting? How does that work, Obi-Wan?
Well, we know that Obi-Wan thinks that guns are crude weapons anyway, so maybe he didn't pay much attention when he was loading the thing. I don't know. That was weird. I thought that was kind of odd. Like, you put the ammunition in there, wouldn't you know how many rounds you had? But maybe he's just not very good at it.
And you know, now that I think about it, now that we know what the ending is, I'm not going to say it till we get there, But that, I guess that was kind of a clue that they didn't trust him, that they didn't trust him to give him a real gun because they didn't want to get shot in the back.
Very true. And we do see that they didn't trust him. But trusted or not, he is one of the ones that does make it to the final rendezvous point. One of the few that makes it to the rendezvous point. With everybody else detained, Cad Bane, Morallo Evol, and Senator Palpatine arrive at the rendezvous point, are mystified by the distinct lack of Dooku when Hardeen / Obi-Wan shows up. And this was the point where I thought he's got something, where he pushes a button and his face or his voice comes back and they're going to say, and he's going to just let the cat out of the bag and surprise him. But nope, he was Hardeen right up to the point where Mace and Anakin showed up and then told all.
I was really surprised by this because I was fairly certain that, especially when they started throwing punches and things, that he would lose that little voice box robot thing or something would happen and his face would start reverting. And like, I'm really, really surprised with the fact that they didn't do that. And it kept me involved in the episode a lot more than I was, because I was kind of assuming that I had this pretty well picked out. And finding that I didn't was a lot more engaging. I like that they twisted it.
Jen, I'm right there with you. It, the fact that they kind of threw us that red herring and redirected was satisfying in a way that you expect that you know what's going to happen, and to find out that you don't really does, you know, sort of keep you invested in the episode.
Speaking of knowing what's happening, we thought we knew what was going on here. Dooku didn't show, so I kind of had it in my mind, oh, he's going to make he's going to be sending a message to Sidious about the plan not working or something later, and this is the end. But then I kind of noticed the counter on the episode and realized we still have a few minutes left. This isn't as over as we're making it. And we get our first false ending where all the Jedi go home and it's just Anakin remaining with Palpatine while Obi-Wan goes back to look over the scene because something's not right.
You know, this was another kind of like wow moment for me, is when they start sending all the security forces back. I mean, they had a lot of military hardware on Naboo just to protect the Chancellor. I mean, and we didn't really get a sense of just how much was there until after, you know, it's kind of almost like a background shot while Anakin and Obi-Wan are having their little, you know, having their little spat on the landing field.
Yeah, that was after just a few Senate guards and clones that we saw, to see them taking off with ATTEs and some big serious hardware, all of a sudden you wonder, where was all that hiding?
But just like Jen said at the beginning of the show, this ending is where the meat and potatoes start to hit, because you have the confrontation with Obi-Wan and Anakin. And up until the point that Obi-Wan told Anakin, you know, it was my decision to not tell you, Anakin was blaming the Jedi Council. And then he turns around on Obi-Wan and he was like, you could almost feel the distrust and the dark side creeping in on Anakin when Obi-Wan, his most trusted ally, his brother, we were brothers, Anakin, his brother tells him, I couldn't trust you enough to tell you. That hurt me, man. I was like, oh, because up to this point, we didn't even know it was Obi-Wan's decision. We thought it was, you know, every time when episode 3, Obi-Wan says, you know, Anakin, the council is asking you to spy on Palpatine, not me. And now it kind of makes sense, you know, when Anakin says, how could you ask me to do this? You know, now we have a situation here. Well, it sets that whole thing up, you know, and I just take my hat off to Filoni and his team, because Obi-Wan was actually the one who pulled the trigger on that. That's very powerful.
I interpreted this just a little bit differently. I didn't take that. I didn't take it that Obi-Wan was trying to trick Anakin or didn't trust him enough, I should say. I felt that they used Anakin because they needed Dooku to believe that Obi-Wan was dead for the plan to work, and so they used Anakin's reaction and, you know, his grief and distrust as sort of a tool to fool Dooku, not because they didn't trust him.
Yeah, either way, you're still playing with a wounded snake who will strike. I mean, they already know that Anakin has these attachment issues that could send him to the dark side. That was the whole reason why Yoda didn't want to train him in episode one. And to use that, you know, and kind of just blow that off, I mean, that's very dangerous. It's very dangerous. It was a very powerful scene. Then there's another powerful scene, if I may, Rockstar, where you have Anakin and Palpatine. You know, we think everything's done and over with, and they start talking. There's one line in there that kind of got overlooked the first time I saw it, but the second time I saw it, it was very, very powerful, where Palpatine knows that Anakin is not trusting in the Jedi. And he throws in a line there where Anakin says, "Padme didn't tell me about any banquet." And Palpatine says, "Oh, well, I guess she wanted it to be a surprise." And he kind of gives that look. So he's even throwing it in there. You can't even trust your wife. And I'm like, man, Darth Sidious is a bad mamma jamma.
Again, another example of how they're just laying the groundwork for what we see in episode three, where Palpatine is starting to shove that wedge between Anakin and the Jedi. I mean, not even shoving it, but it, because it's been there, but just pushing it deeper and deeper and widening that gap.
Yeah, but not just the Jedi. This time he's going after Padme. You know, this time he's saying, "You can't even trust your wife. I'm the only one you can trust." And I'm like, that is really evil, man. That is really evil.
I kind of took it, going back to kind of the original thing you guys were talking about, I kind of took it as like Mace Windu was the one who kind of wasn't trusting Anakin, but then Obi-Wan obviously was the one who suggested it for practical reasons. But I almost feel like Yoda was kind of waffling on this. He didn't really feel like it was a great idea. And I'm probably reading into this way too much, but Mace was kind of the one who was pushing for it, because I get the distinct feeling he doesn't trust Anakin even now. He says it flat out in Revenge of the Sith, but even now, I think he's very suspicious, because he's always doing this like shifty eye, like grimacy face thing whenever Anakin's involved. And I actually kind of like that it's each of the Jedi kind of has a little bit in their way, kind of a personal agenda. They're still really selfless, but they have their own motivations for why they're doing things. But what Barrett was saying, the stuff with Darth Sidious was fantastic. I love how sneaky and like wheedling he is with the way he just drops these little hints so subtly, and Anakin just eats them right up. It's beautifully done.
Yes, and then we go into the banquet room and we find that someone is waiting for him, and that someone is not Padme, but rather Dooku and a few Magna Guards. But a rather fun lightsaber battle ensues, and we see Dooku throwing around the furniture and the silverware at Anakin. At one point, he gets a couple forks in his mechanical arm, and he runs his lightsaber through a chair. That was kind of a fun little fight, actually.
That fight was awesome. My favorite part of that, though, was when Anakin and Dooku have lightsabers, and Anakin just grabs Dooku by the throat, physically just wraps his fingers around his throat, and Dooku's only recourse is to like reach around the sabers and just, you know, force lightning Anakin. I just loved that.
Yeah, and you saw Palpatine's grin when that happened, because he thought it was on.
Yeah, I love those candid shots of Palpatine kind of watching the whole thing, because he turned around and Anakin'd be like, "Get out of here." He's like, oh, yeah, sure, I'm out of here. Ready, second. And then he'd be right back to watching it. I thought that was really, really cool. This is a cool lightsaber battle.
Oh, yeah. You know, there's a lot of talk in the forums when we kind of found out that Anakin, every time Anakin faces off against Count Dooku, against Tyrannus, everybody always goes back to that line in episode three where he says, "My powers have doubled since last we met, Count." Well, in this episode, you could see how much more powerful Anakin is. When Count Dooku tries to throw a chair at Anakin and is using the Force to try to push him back, Anakin is using the Force pushback. We haven't seen that in a while. And he's trying to force his lightsaber into Dooku's skull. And like you said, Jen, that really made Palpatine very happy. Not only that, at the end of the battle, Dooku gives a sigh, like he was tired out from having to fight Anakin this time. You know, every other time we've seen them fight, you know, Dooku has been very stoic. You know, he started off that way, you know, battling Anakin with one hand and stuff like that. But by the end of this fight, Dooku was tired. So this kind of gives a little credence to Anakin's power is growing. And maybe by the time he does face him in episode 3, his powers have doubled.
But you notice even in that, Dooku didn't give Anakin any credit. He still jived him just a little bit. It was he found Obi-Wan to be a worthy opponent, but Anakin, not so much.
That was my favorite line. I'm like, why did you have to say that? Just throw a little salt in the wound, man. But that's part of the plan, you know. Make sure that he doubts himself. Get him angry. You know, that's how you bring him to the dark side. For all we know, Dooku wants Anakin to be his apprentice. You know, he needs an apprentice. And that's how you go to the dark side. Anger. Use your anger to defeat me. You know, in the Savage Opress, when Savage says, I hate you. You know, he says, good. You know, they love that. They love it when their apprentices hate them. You know, it gives them power. They feed off of that. So I thought that was very, very, very fun. And at the same time, I think Dooku knew he could have been defeated. And maybe he was trying to save a little face by just knocking him down a peg.
Well, reaching into the EU again and looking at the Episode 3 novelization, I believe at one point Dooku is reflecting on the way he perceives Sidious's plan. And he never really feels that he wasn't going to be the Sith apprentice, that he wasn't going to take up the mantle of Sith Lord. But he knew at one point that Sidious wanted Anakin to kind of lead the Force-using army that Sidious planned to establish. And it isn't until the last minute in the book that he realized that he was never destined to be the true apprentice, that it was all tests and different tasks and a learning process for Anakin that Sidious had set up.
So with the sudden arrival of Obi-Wan, once he's realized that it was a trap all along, that Dooku had known that Obi-Wan was Hardeen, things seem to be a little bit more repaired between Obi-Wan and Anakin. I think that goes back to our fortune cookie talking about trust is the greatest gift, but it must be earned, showing that Obi-Wan kind of made a move to regain that trust, and it seems to have worked a little bit. Whether or not this leads to how we see their relationship in the end or in the beginning of Episode 3, we'll see next season. All right, this feels like we flew through it really fast, but does anybody feel like we missed anything?
You know, the only thing that I just, again, obviously it couldn't happen because we know how it needs to be at the beginning of Episode 3. But when Obi-Wan jumps onto the ramp of the shuttle to grab Palpatine, just as Anakin and Dooku were dueling almost right behind him, if Obi-Wan had turned just a little bit, he could have impaled Dooku and ended it right there. I noticed that each time that I watched it. It's like, it wouldn't have been that tough.
But I just don't see Obi-Wan as a stabby in the back kind of guy.
Again, Jedi are very Machiavellian. The ends justify the means. You know, we've seen that. Obviously, Anakin's feelings, Anakin's opinions and don't matter as much as getting the job done. So I think that if they were to act a little underhanded or a little backstabby, let's just use that term, if it was to end the war that much sooner, I can't see a Jedi not doing it. They're way too stoic.
I don't know about that. I think maybe Anakin would have stabbed him in the back, and I think maybe Mace would have stabbed him in the back. But I don't think Obi-Wan would have, and I don't think Yoda would have. I think that their mission was to make sure the Chancellor was safe, and that was his number one goal. And I'm not quite sure that all the Jedi would have went that route. No, undoubtedly some of them would have done that, you know. And obviously, if you were a Jedi, you would have lopped his head off as soon as you walked past him. And I'm not too sure that I wouldn't. But Obi-Wan's kind of more civilized, you know. He kind of has respect for Dooku, I think. You know, Obi-Wan kind of has respect for all of his enemies, you know, the way he talks to Ventress, my sweet. And, you know, he gives respect to everybody that might not even give respect to him. So I'm not sure that was it would have probably been a little bit out of character, I think, if Obi-Wan would have stabbed him in the back for me.
Now, unfortunately, this week we're not able to retrieve our voicemails because Arnie and Marjorie are off at Toy Fair. gallivanting around New York and seeing what fabulous new fun things are in store for us next year. So, unfortunately, we did not receive your voicemails for this episode in time. If there is opportunity, though I'm sure we will have an onslaught with the next episode, if there is opportunity, we will try to get some in. However, with the next four episodes beginning the Darth Maul return arc, that may not happen. So we do apologize to everybody who left us a voicemail that didn't get heard. Don't think that you shouldn't call in next time, because I'm sure we're all going to have a lot to say, and we want to hear what everybody has to say about the return of Darth Maul. And with this episode having very little impact on continuity, as in none, there's no continuity corner this week. So all that remains is a preview. Oh, wait, we didn't get that unless you went out and saw episode 1 in 3D already. Then you saw a bit of a preview for the upcoming Darth Maul arc. But from all appearances, it appears that we have next week off with the Darth Maul story arc beginning with the episode airing February 24th entitled Massacre.
Yes, they're giving us next week off so everybody can make sure that they walk into the theater, see episode 1 in 3D, and see the Darth Maul preview that will be coming up in a couple weeks.
So everyone enjoy your week off, and we will be back here in 2 weeks to begin our season finale story arc with the return of Darth Maul and Massacre. I want to thank Jen, Jonathan, and Barrett for joining me on this story arc, and all of you for tuning in, and we will see you next time.
See you next time.
Take care, everyone.
Morale, we've all. We'll see you next season.
Thank you for listening to Republic Forces Radio Network. Remember, we want your thoughts on the next episode of the Clone Wars series. You can leave us a voicemail at 415-508-JEDI every week from the time the new episode airs, and voicemails received by 1 a.m. Sunday morning may be included in our next episode. You can find our reviews of previous Clone Wars episodes, as well as our summer series reviewing the classic droid cartoon series, at our website, www.republicforces.com. And be sure to listen to our other Star Wars podcast, Star Wars Action News, covering all aspects of Star Wars collecting, from figures to high-end collectibles to Star Wars Band-Aids. Republic Forces Radio Network is hosted by Jerry, Arnie, Dan, Jen, Barrent, and Nathan P. Butler of StarWarsFanWorks.com. Republic Forces Radio Network, RepublicForces.com, and Star Wars Action News are not affiliated with Lucasfilm or any other official Star Wars-related company. Star Wars and all of the Star Wars universe contains are copyright and trademarked Lucasfilm Limited, and no infringement is intended. Republic Forces Radio Network is a Venganza Media production. Copyright 2012. All rights reserved.